My daughter Ren is turning 5. And one of her favorite things to do, at least since she was about 3, is dance. She'll dance by herself, she'll leap through the air and twirl around in circles. But even better than that is when my spouse Amanda and I dance with her in the kitchen at night. She's not picky about the kind of music, and she really will find a rhythm in anything. I, on the other hand, despite having a proclivity for music, am not a good dancer, not even a little bit. So we do something simple. The 3 of us hold hands, and we kind of prance in a circle going one way, and then when the spirit moves, we prance in a circle going the other direction. Sometimes Ren will just swing from our arms, smiling and laughing with glee at this funny little circular dance. It's one of the things that makes me the happiest. It's one of the times that I feel the very closest to my family. And I really hope that as she grows up, she will remember that joy of dancing in the kitchen at night, of Daddy's terrible dance moves. But most of all, I hope she remembers the sheer joy and love that we all shared spinning in a circle with her and around her. Today, we celebrate the Feast of the Holy Trinity. Many, or actually I should say most, of my clergy colleagues fear this day. As one person put it, you have 12 minutes to crystallize 2 millennia of Christian doctrine, and you have to do it without putting people to sleep. Now, that is a challenge. And there's been so much that has been written and said about the Trinity to help us understand it. But it fails. Let me give you an example. The Father is God. The Son is God. The Spirit is God. A equals B equals C. All are God. I think we're good there. But the Father is not the Son and not the Spirit. The Son is not the Spirit and not the Father. And the Spirit is not the Father and not the Son. It's getting more complicated. How about this? God is 3 persons of 1 essence, 3 in 1 and 1 in 3. Or as the Lutheran pastor Nadia Boltz-Weber put it, 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals 1. That's just bad math. In fact, a major theme in explaining the Trinity has been to use formulas that sound far more like a puzzle than any kind of statement of belief. And none of the ways that people have described the Trinity are necessarily wrong per se. They're just not necessarily right either. I find it interesting that the Feast of the Holy Trinity would come after Easter and after Pentecost, after the great 50 days have ended. That only after we've experienced the fullness of Jesus' earthly existence do we actually start to think about God in God's totality. It's hard to know for sure how it worked out that way. But I like to imagine it's the church's way of saying, not so fast. You've had the nativity, maybe you sort of understand it. You've had the resurrection, maybe you sort of understand that. You have seen Jesus ascend. You've experienced the descent of the Holy Spirit at Pentecost. Maybe you understand all of those things. But God is still a mystery. Despite all that you have seen and experienced, it's just not enough to fully fathom God. I once asked Ren what God is, and she said, God is everything. So did the early Celtic Christians. When I asked her what that meant, she said, God makes everything vibrate. Paul Tillich described God similarly, too, as the ground of all being. But Augustine said that if you can understand it, then it's not God. And St. John of the Cross asserts at the end of his Dark Night of the Soul that God is nada, 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 nothing, no thing. God is the Alpha and the Omega. God is the beginning and the end. God is everything and God is nothing. And face it, God's a puzzle. We're not going to figure it out. And so, instead, what if we leaned into the fact that we can't explain the Holy Trinity and that we never will? What if we tried to live into it instead? Let me give you an example. I want to share this story with you from a TV show that many years ago now called The Middle. I don't know if anybody watched it. It was a great show. It revolved around a family in the Midwest and just their daily struggles with life. Well, in one episode, they go camping. Their youngest child, Brick, is, to put it mildly, obsessed with books. In fact, he brings a book about the lake that they are going to camp at to the lake where they are camping. And his dad, Mike, is concerned that he's missing out on the experience of the lake, and that he's hiding behind this book. So he takes him, and they go sit at the edge of the lake together. Brick still has his book, and he continues reading, and then Mike says, "We're here to spend time together and enjoy the lake." To which Brick replies, "Oh, you want to know about the lake? It says the lake is 200 feet at its deepest and fed by 8 streams." Mike starts to get frustrated and he says, "Really? What color is it?" Brick starts just kind of squinting at the book. Print's a little fuzzy. Maybe gray? Or, at which point Mike pushes the book down and Brick sees the real lake for the first time. "Oh. Actually, it's more blue and silvery." Brick pauses and then adds, "They should really take a better picture and put that in a book so people can enjoy it." Finally, Mike explains, "Brick, you did just enjoy it, and you know why? Because you looked at it. You got to look at the lake and the trees and the whole deal, or else you're missing out." And that's the danger of focusing too closely on the intellectual. We risk missing out on the experience. And sometimes that experience is everything. In her Revelations of Divine Love, the 14th century mystic Julian of Norwich wrote, "The Blessed Trinity revealed itself to me and filled my heart to overflowing with joy. I realize that this is what it will be like in the world to come, for all beings and for all time. For the Trinity is God, and God is the Trinity. The Trinity is our Creator and our Sustainer, our Beloved forever and ever, our endless joy and bliss." The Trinity isn't just some abstract concept or a thought exercise. Trinity bypasses all of that. It goes between our thoughts and hits us right in the emotions. And it really doesn't matter practically what the three persons are, but how they are. How do the Father and the Son and the Spirit interact? Very early in the church, a term was coined specifically for how the Trinity related to each other. It's called perichoresis. You don't have to remember it, but at its core, it means that the Trinity is a dance and never, ever static. the Father, the Son, and the Spirit dancing in a circle with such amazing love and abandon that it's hard to tell where one stops and another begins. It's all about this spinning, creative, loving dance. And when we think about God like this, God isn't some distant being way off. God even stops being a noun. God is rightly understood as a verb. Peter Rollins tells us that God is an event, not a fact to be grasped, but an incoming to be undergone. We are constantly invited into the event of God. We are wrapped up in the divine mystery each week, where the simple bread and wine become the body and blood of Christ. There's always a place for us in this heavenly dance, just like there is always a place for us at this table. And like my family, dancing in a circle around the kitchen within the Holy Trinity, there's a little pulling, there's a little pushing, there's a little laughing, talking, bonding, and listening to each other, sharing love and affection. And you feel the others pressing against you too. It's chaotic. There aren't words. You just have to experience it. And that's the image that we are created into. That's the life that we are baptized into. The most faithful thing we can do is to go out into the world and to live it.